right. Well, good evening, commissioners. I just want to kind of let you know that I sent out my operations report about 2.5 weeks ago when we were still anticipating a regular meeting. So you had a chance to see that. I then kind of did a quick revision last Friday, and hopefully you all had a chance to take a look at that. So I'll just try to get the highlights for you. Basically, our call volumes are down compared to 2019. 7% decrease in call volume, but of course this was done through February, kind of before we had the shelter in place and the coronavirus. Just to kind of highlight overall our shoot times, which is again from time of page to a natural resource rolling, we're averaging 2 minutes and 44 seconds, which is pretty good, but I'm hoping that we can get better. We'll keep working on that one. Our response time overall, 8 minutes and 10 seconds with 96% of the calls under 20, which is kind of our suburban benchmark. But again, especially with our calls in town, I'd like to get under that urban benchmark of 10 minutes. We're at 68% of our calls meeting that requirement. So again, always room for improvement, and I think as we adjust our staffing models and our response models, we'll get better with that. Moving on to the finances, again, we're 17% into the year as of February. Our revenue is down. Again, part of that has got to do with collection of taxes. That tends to be the big limiting factor there, so we're only at 5.2% of our budget projections. And with that, our expenses at 13.1% of budgeted projections. So while not at that 17%, it's a little higher than our revenue, but still under what we're projecting. So I think we all kind of understood the need for being very fiscally responsible and trying to make sure that we weren't outspending our revenue. The GEMT, again, reflects that that smaller call volume. We're only at 8.7% of what we projected for our budget. I do also want to alert you to something new, and this is always kind of a little weird in that I have information that came up in March, but we're reporting on the February period, but I do want you guys to know that there was a bit of an overpayment for the GEMT based on their fiscal year of 2019. We needed to pay back about $13,000 in fees that were sent to us. Again, in perspective, for the calendar year of 2019, we collected nearly almost $900,000 in revenue, but that, again, included some of those payments from 2017, 2018, and 2019 all were involved there. So we have scheduled that repayment of an overpayment. It's based on what we projected our cost per call is versus what it actually calculated out to be. There's about 4 or 5 different programs that are involved with this refunding or with this funding through the GEMT, and it's hard to predict sometimes depending on who's the entity that repays or pays into that GEMT fund. So that you'll see that expenditure come March. Moving on to, well, I guess that was basically kind of wraps up the finances. Are there any questions that I can answer in regards to our financials?
I don't have anything at this time.
Okay, great. Thanks. And I'll just kind of take that silence as good news. For just punching up the community, again, we were able to do a few classes back in January and February. The big one was our wilderness classes that were done for Camp Orkaila. We do wilderness first responder classes and refreshers. Those were completed, and of course, currently we're suspending all of those types of classes due to trying to keep the building more pristine and trying to limit the spread of COVID. So we found out from the American Heart Association that a lot of the expiration dates for certifications have been extended due to the nature of this emergency. So we're not too terribly worried. We I think the public, the general public understands that. And there are still online options where somebody can take the didactic portions of the of any of those CPR and first aid classes and then schedule to come in individually to have their skills checked up. Nobody's taken advantage of that yet, so we're just kind of on hold for that particular part. Just to kind of punch up what's going on with the operations, we're all doing our best to work from home and work remotely. However, you know, with staff, I tend to be here every day, and I'm at least checking with the crews in the beginning of the day, and if I can get out to 3 in the afternoon, then I'll do that. Heather kind of does the same thing. But regardless, we do have the ability to maintain our social distancing. We've got two different offices, Heather in the one, me in the other, so we're feeling pretty good about that, but also working pretty hard to stay out of the building if at all possible, and to limit the number of people coming into the building. It's limited to the crews right now. We've changed our response model just a bit, asking our normal volunteer responders to hang back, stay home, stay out of the building. We've adopted and adapted a new schedule to go with for the COVID response, where we have our full-time staff EMT and asking another person to fill a second seat. And we've worked out shifting with that so that that would keep us response ready, and we would be able to limit the rest of the volunteer force. That is, unless we have something that, that really requires many, many hands, a CPR call, a motor vehicle accident. And of course, we're working in coordination with the fire department as well right now. They've adopted the same kinds of modeling where they've put a full engine company on 24/7. And that's kind of our go-to. If there's a fire-related call that they need backup, EMS backup, we have a crew ready to go and respond. If we have an EMS call where we need more hands, instead of putting that call out to the entire agency and bringing a lot of disparate people in, we can call for engine 311 to respond on that engine that's a three-person engine company. With the possibility of a fourth seat, and I believe Chief Collins is looking at filling that fourth seat. We can either do that with a EMT only or another volunteer EMT firefighter or firefighter only, and have those things taken care of. So that is staffed, and those folks are there and available if we need more hands, which is really great, and it's something that dispatch knows about, our crews know about, and we have that that option there. So the collaboration of putting those two efforts together has, I think it's paid off very, very well. I think Pam touched briefly on the auditors coming in, having finished their evaluation. I know Commissioner Lindstrom and Commissioner Clary were both on that call with the auditors and the exit interview, and I think it went very well. We had two management letters that one was in with inventory control, and the other one was in relationship to financial statement preparation. And of course, we're making progress on both of those fronts, and the auditors acknowledge that progress that we were making. So we'll keep moving on with that. EMS, County EMS and Trauma Council didn't meet during the reporting period, but they did meet early in March. I'm sure Commissioner Seitz will be able to expand on that, the committee reports, because I was unavailable to attend. But she was there, as was Chief Collins and Lainey Volk, who's our representative from the San Juan Island EMS. So that was pretty well, went pretty well.
Augusta.
Just so we also know that our staff training, we've kind of suspended that right now. It's not happening within the building, but we've managed to do a large Teams teleconference with Dr. Corsa, and that went really well. We had quite a few participants. Most of the agency was involved with that, listening in, paying attention to those run reviews, which is our kind of our internal QIQA, quality improvement, quality assessment there. And so that worked out pretty well. We're also, as far as the integration portion of our project, again, things are on hold, and we were on schedule to deal with the vote with the annexation of the town into the fire district, but that's been delayed because of the governor's order, and that particular election has been postponed. So that's where we are right now. The town annexation vote will come up not in an April election, but further down the line. I believe it's June where they're looking at doing that. The other thing that I added in my report was just kind of the COVID-19 situation. And that's not only come through on my ops report, but it's also, I think, was posted on Facebook, and it was in a couple of different media outlets, kind of where we are, how we responded to the COVID-19 crisis, what we're doing at the station, how we're liaisoning, while we're part of the county EOC. I serve as in the operations section as the branch director and represent the EMS, fire EMS response throughout the county. We as county providers, those first responders, fire EMS, put our own operating group together, our own operations center. We kind of work on making sure that we have a unified and cohesive response across the county. And then I act as a liaison from that fire operations group to back up into the county EOC and work with requisitions for PPE to update them on our process and our progress, and then anything that needs to come down from the EOC that is related to the different agencies responding as EMS and first responders. So that pretty much covers my report, and I am happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
Does anyone have any questions for our chief? I'm getting silence, so I'm assuming that you're good. I think there's probably more to come as we discuss new business.
Absolutely.
Okay. Again, just a reminder for everyone to turn off their microphones. If they're not muted, please mute. And we do have unfinished business here with our committee reports and discussions. Just in trying to expedite this process, we had a lot of committees that just didn't meet. And so there isn't much to report on, I don't think. In fact, did meet in March. I can't hear you. Can I hear
you? I unmuted it.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the town council met, and from what I remember, the conversation was a lot about PPE.
Okay.
Accessing that and sharing that and trying to figure out what to do about expired PPE. Dr. Corso is there, and that was a topic, and also how the flight people were using PPE and how they were going to deal with potential infected clients and keep everybody safe and cleaning out the ambulances, also, you know, how to keep that all going in a good way, or how to use one vehicle for infected patients so that keep the other vehicles clean. And then there was also talk about testing and the issues around how testing was being done elsewhere and how we could get testing going better in the community. And talking about the EOC, because it just started up recently. And so Dr. Corsa and Chief Collins and someone else from the Trauma Care Council were going to go over and meet with the EOC that day. And so I think they did and made some connections on how it was working. So that was good. But I think there was a lot of talk about accessing PPE, because at that time people were trying and orders just had stopped coming in, and it was trying to figure out, well, how was that going to happen? So it was a very good conversation to be a part of, certainly the biggest issues that were going on around healthcare at that moment. Any questions about that?
I don't have any. Thank you, Gail. Is everybody still with us? If no one has any objections, I don't think there are any. You know, there wasn't a CCC meeting. The Integration Steering Committee was postponed. There isn't much to share in that regard, and we could move on to new business. Is that okay with everybody?
At least I was trying to turn my microphone on there. You know, when I looked at the Community Relations Committee, I'm wondering if during this COVID-19 that maybe we need to at least have a remote meeting. I don't know. It sounds like, I'll tell you, Kyle Dodd was just fantastic.
Agreed.
And I don't know, does anybody feel like there's any need for us?
That's you and me. Let's have a meeting.
Okay. All right. We'll schedule that.
Okay.
You know what? I feel kind of bad because I'm on the liaison to the liaison committee, and so I'm supposed to push information out. Given it was supposed to be to senior organizations. But certainly, any information we've sent out, and you guys could be on the community calls. There's a community call tomorrow, Thursday, community partners, and it is very interesting. Mark gives an update, much like Kyle's, about what's changed this week, and there's always lots of new things happening. So I can check with Mark, but I'm sure it'd be fine to have you guys on the call, and that would be a good way to. And then, you know, the website is amazing for the county. If you've seen it, all those hot topic updates and everything are really useful for what's happening currently and what the county's pushing up. So I'm happy to, I'll connect you guys to the calls and too, and then you can decide if we need to put out information as a DHD as well, but that would be a great thing for you guys to be a part of.
Great idea, thank you. So as far as new business, we obviously, all of these sort of fall under COVID-19 related issues. Let's see, and under this header, we've got Eventide, health, the county response, the hospital logistic role, EMS needs, and chain of command. I'm just going to try to keep us on track with these. I think you all received the correspondence that we had from Dr. House at Eventide. Correct? Yes. Okay. It sounds like the practice is fairly taxed by this process. And I think that perhaps under the Community Relations Committee that this is maybe a topic that Commissioner Lehman and I could pursue a little further about how to be a good partner, or at least, you know, we're restricted from financially supporting Eventide, but to sort of figure out how we could be a supportive entity. Anyone else? No?
No, I think that Dr. House is doing a great job. I think he's fitting into the community well, and anything that we can do, I think he's working well with PIMC as well. So I'm really happy that it doesn't feel like there's tension. So anything we can do, I'm all for it.
I agree that he's been trying to be as innovative as possible at this time, and he's certainly reaching out to a lot of people, and I think having two access points for care is really a great thing in our community, and has been with Dr. Dawson before him as well. So I'd like to make sure we always have that if possible, and try to offer whatever we can to keep his services going as well.
We're restricted by our contract with the hospital for really supporting him financially through this difficult time. And I realize the added expense for his practice with testing and expertise and staffing has been a real challenge. And again, I do agree it's really important that people in our community have a choice. So, I mean, I think as a board, we could write a letter asking, you know, outside agencies like the Inner Island Healthcare Foundation or the San Juan Community Foundation to look at supporting him. He also has a study going on that he's received funding for that he still needs some help. So that's something that we could look at as well. So perhaps that's something that Trish and I can pursue in our community relations committee. Right. Good with everybody? Okay. Okay, and then under these topics, we had county response to the COVID, and I think that Kyle Dodd did a great job just briefing us, and it was very reassuring to hear what he had to say. As far as the hospital district role in this process, I think it's the reason why we wanted both Mary Ann Keene from the hospital and Kyle Dodd to speak today was just so we were aware of what's going on so that we are able to pass on appropriate information to the public. And then anybody have any further comments on that particular topic? I feel like saying Bueller or something. Okay. So then EMS needs, that is a question for Carl. You're still with us. We sort of talked about this last week about, you know, just how things are going there and if anything extra is needed. And I had brought up the idea of hazard pay.
Well, you know, we've adapted to the crisis, trying to make sure that, like I mentioned before, trying to make sure that we have limit the amount of volunteer responders. We have asked that that we have a second EMT on and kind of establish that. We had a little bit, we had issues and some challenges trying to get somebody to be here and commit to a 24-hour shift and then be ready to go and be here at the station and respond on the ambulance. The nice thing about coordinating this effort with the fire department is that on all their engine companies, all their crews, at least two of the three members, and oftentimes three, are cross-trained individuals. Those who know both have been trained through the fire department and trained as EMTs. So that's given us some of the depth that has helped us to kind of come through this. We've had two or three individuals who really stepped up and worked on filling these holes in the schedule. It's starting to become a little bit more of a burden for them, and we're putting out another request soon to see if we can get individuals to fill the second seat here on the ambulance and possibly even fill the fourth seat over on the engine from District 3. So we've been coping. The good thing about this process is it feels like a freight train, but it's a slow rolling freight train. So we've been able to kind of keep up with it and jump on and stay nimble enough to get that response. We're pretty well set with PPE. We've been communicating with the county EOC. We were kind of on the front of the curve. I think when we first realized this, we made our folks, our staff EMTs, and administratively, we said, yeah, let's get those orders in sooner rather than later, and our stockpiles are pretty good. The challenge for us right now are our disposable gowns, which is one level that we use with infectious patients. But we've got some contingency plans in place. We're talking about some coveralls that might be able to be reused and laundered. We're establishing even though we were good with our supplies, we're establishing protocols to make sure that we extend the life of our PPE, to make sure that we're reusing where appropriate. We know we can use, for example, an N95 mask up to 5 times or 4 hours of continuous use. So the other thing that we're looking forward to is to kind of address your comment, Commissioner Lindstrom, about hazard pay. While that hasn't been something that's been formalized and that might put a stretch on our budget to try to initiate anything special like that, there are some federal programs that are being looked at right now. There's a federal one called the CARES program. There's one called SIRENS. There's another one that's called HEROES. A lot of these are with rural communities in mind. So those possibilities are being explored. I know Chief Collins has been very, very helpful. He's tapped into a lot of the national level kinds of things. And so they have, I believe it might be twice a week, maybe daily, updates where he's dealing with a national committee that's kind of dealing with this in terms of the Fire Chiefs Association. And he's been very, very free in forwarding information back and forth. We're working really hard at making sure that both agencies understand what's going on and what's available. And, of course, that's pushed out to the other fire EMS agencies throughout the county as well. So those are all really good things. At this point in time, I think we're okay. We've got a process in place where we're kind of doing a weekly assessment, looking at our staffing. We're looking at our PPE. We're saying, well, you know, I've got a week's worth of stuff that I'm going to call that our, you know, red. We need to find procurement for those kinds of things. If I've got 2 to 3 weeks, we'll call it for a yellow stage. If I've got 3 weeks or more, we'll call it a green stage. And for most of our PPE, we're in the green, which is good. Again, the challenge is trying to make sure that we've got the responders that we need. I think we may find that as this shelter in place moves a little bit further along, that people who are kind of precluded from their regular jobs may be willing to, you know, sit here in the station and respond, you know, be here for 24 hours or 48 hours and be ready to respond on the ambulance. So we'll put that request out. And response ready. So in terms of the needs for EMS right now, we're okay. We do want to, you know, make sure that we're talking to our membership and we get the folks who are out there willing and able to help us respond. And, you know, it's pretty much business as usual. We have our normal backups. Pam backs me up. I back her up. We've got Heather here. We know that that you, as the commissioners, are available. Our teams, whether it's the medic on call or the staff EMT in the ambulance, they understand operations well enough that I don't feel that we have an issue there where we need any sort of constant hand-holding or anything like that. These are capable and smart individuals, and we've been managing pretty well. So at this point in time, I don't see any pressing needs that we have other than, we'll continue to do the job. The challenge is to manage the information. There are lots of meetings. There's lots of updates. Sometimes you just have to kind of pass through a lot of the emails that come through and do a lot of filtering and sorting. I think the challenge is going to be to try to make sure that we limit on the amount of meetings. Everybody wants to let everybody else know what's going on, but sometimes that's, you spend more time in the meeting than you don't get to do the actual work. So that's going to be the challenge moving forward, is just keep it short, keep it simple, keep it sweet, let's get back to it. So I don't know if that answers your questions or alleviates any of your concerns, but that's what I have for you. Please let me know, is there anything else that I can answer for you?
Nice, great. I, you know, one of the things that I had was but curious about was the chain of command at EMS. Like, if you have to, if you get exposed, you have to go out, or any, you know, in anybody in your agency, just knowing who would step in for you. And we talked about that, but would you just update the rest of the board on that?
Sure. I mean, we have that set up. I mean, that's operations, and we do have that covered. But just so you know that there's working remotely capabilities. When I was, you know, there was a period of 2 or 3 days when I wasn't feeling all that great, but managed to, you know, work remotely. It's a nice thing about having the laptops and the equipment that has been issued through EMS. The connectivity is good, so we're able to do that. I rely on Heather. She's not only the executive assistant here and more than capable, she also serves as my deputy for my role at the county EOC. So she's there. Pam, again, is the backup. The crews themselves know what's going on. And frankly, I think all of us know that we have the resource over at Fire District 3 between Assistant Chief Monin and Chief Collins. You know, they're there to kind of help support backup. We're all working together, and vice versa. I can be there to help those crews there. We all, you know, we all know each other. We all are familiar with the crews that are on right now. So I think, you know, operationally, we're okay. We've got that figured out, and the people know who they need to talk to and who they report back to. So,
you know, that's separate. Is there a clear, like, line of succession? I mean, what if you end up on a bench and you can't talk? What if you get COVID-19 and you can't talk and you're on a bench, which is a real possibility? It can happen to anybody, any age, any health status. So who do they go to? Who runs EMS? Who is the person? Where does the buck stop?
Well, if it's me, hopefully it won't be an immediate kind of thing where all of a sudden I am gone. Heather kind of, you know, handles the day-to-day operations. Pam would move into that position because, you know, we have ourselves backed up. And I think our responders, while it hasn't been formally discussed, know that that Chief Collins and Assistant Chief Monin are there and available for guidance in terms of operations. So if that kind of situation happened, I was on a vent and completely, you know, out of the picture, then I think it would be up to Pam and you all to kind of appoint somebody as an interim, I suppose, if, you know, for lack of a better term. We'd have to figure out, you know, the next step. But as far as the immediate, we're covered. We can get stuff done that we need to get done until we get to that point. Obviously, Superintendent Hutchins was, she was an EMS chief for a period of 9 months. So she knows the situation, she knows the operation, and she can handle that administratively. And again, we do have that resource over at Fire to help with the details of operations.
Great, thank you. Mm-hmm. Anything further? So in that case, we'll move on to Resolution 2519, Emergency Declaration for San Juan Island EMS. This resolution is required, so we can request, or the agency can request funding from FEMA or other institutions. It doesn't really do a lot else. We don't have any big purchases that we need to make or anything under this, but it's intended to be a short-term emergency declaration for the entire district, though it mostly deals with EMS. Chief Kutsing, would you talk us through this a little bit more than my basic explanation there?
Sure. This is something that other first response kinds of agencies have enacted and worked throughout the state. Obviously, as you look through this resolution and all the preamble, all the whereases, it talks about what was done at the state level from the governor's declaration, at the federal level, what happened at the county level as our county council also declared as a state of emergency. The feeling in consultation with our attorneys was that as an EMS agency, there is an RCW that lets us declare our own state of emergency. And what that does is allows for us to make quick decisions if we need to sign a contract to get things in, to procure equipment, supplies. It allows us to move outside of the normal parameters of board approval, where we can make that quick decision, be nimble about it. It authorizes me as the chief to be able to sign those contracts, to make those orders, to make the payments that need to be. And if it's anything outside of the normal operations, I bring that to you as the board, and you either ratify it kind of after the fact with this emergency, or you say, yeah, you know, you kind of overstepped. I want you to walk that back. I don't anticipate any immediate kinds of things that we need to do in regards to that, but the idea is all of this works better if you're proactive about it instead of making the decision and then saying and asking for permission later. If we have the permissions in place, then it's very easy for us to move forward and follow the letter of the law. So that's what Resolution 2519 does. It declares our own public hospital district number one state of emergency and gives some of those temporary powers to the chief so that we can sign the contracts, make the procurements. It's basically, if you look at the document, it's the real meat of it is in section 3. And it just says that, you know, we're following the rules as established by the RCW. And what it allows us to do is obtain supplies, equipment, personal property, professional, procured, or technical services, awarding contracts as we need to, such public works as defined in our RCW, and authorize overtime, authorize extensions, leave, all those kinds of things, and then come back after the fact and do that. And you can see that Nathan is sharing his screen with you, and hopefully you can all see that. And I was talking about Section 3 there, the powers portion. That's the real meat of it. Of course, this is in place until we get to until the emergency is over, and then we terminate this temporary resolution with another resolution, and we go back to business as usual.
Great, thank you. Are there any questions? In that case, I would.
Sorry, quick one. I don't have any questions. Just that there was something in the first recital that referred to COVID-19 having the potential to result in serious illness or death to vulnerable or at-risk populations. And I just suggest that we get rid of vulnerable or at-risk populations. My understanding is that everybody could get seriously ill or die from it. But I don't. Maybe I'm totally wrong on that. It just seemed a little limited. But it also really doesn't matter for this resolution, I don't think, and I support this. Thanks for bringing it forward, guys.
Certainly, and I can let you know, too, that basically once we kind of looked at this situation, I went right away to the public hospital district's attorney, Richard Davis, and explained what we were doing. They specifically call out fire districts or fire departments, with the idea that for the most part, EMS is along with fire, and I wanted to make sure that us as an EMS under a public hospital district had the same rights and the same responsibilities throughout this, and Rich was kind enough to say, yep, you're covered, you're good to go, and he also let me know that many other agencies and districts and departments that he works with throughout Western Washington were facing the same thing, and he gave me a whole bunch of templates and said, here's what I've been providing to the others, this is what I've got, and Nathan and Heather and I kind of looked at these, and I'm not sure, I think Pam was involved with it as well, and just kind of filled in appropriately for our agency and made those kind of changes, but basically followed his template.
I can, this is Nathan, I can remove that section to vulnerable or at-risk populations pretty easily on the fly if the board would like. Actually, it's almost easier to edit these documents this way than it is in our regular board meetings.
That's fine with me. Anyone else? Okay, so at this time, I would entertain a motion and a second to adopt the resolution.
This is Commissioner Loring. I move to adopt Resolution 20-519, granting emergency authority to the Sandwich Island EMS.
This is Gail.
Is that as amended or is that as originally constituted?
Good point.
I'll just say as amended.
Yeah, I think.
And did I hear a second?
Trish and I seconded, I think, at the same time.
Yeah. Okay. Jinx, double. Okay, and now I have to go through and do the vote, so I'm just going to do the roll call again. Mr. Clary?
Aye.
Myself, I say aye. Commissioner Lehman?
Aye.
Commissioner Lisbon? Aye.
Aye.
And Commissioner Lyne?
Aye.
Great. And then we have yet another request for a resolution 20-520, request for emergency funding from FEMA. This resolution is predicated on the declaration of emergency. It's to be appended to a funding request. And again, I will defer to Chief Putzing on this.
Thank you. Again, this one is more or less designed so that as we incur additional expenses outside of the norm, whether that's staffing expenses, overtime pay, more PPE, more equipment, more supplies that are in direct response to the COVID-19 crisis, that we can officially. It gives me the ability to converse with the state and or the federal government to make the requests for either being compensated for those kinds of things to make out for those kinds of things or to make requests directly from the state stores, from the county stores. It's a thing that deals with being able to deal directly as opposed to through the commission to deal with FEMA, to deal with the Fed, to deal with the state, any sources of additional funding or sites of PPE, supplies, any of those kinds of things. Again, we're basically, when we're looking at this, we're getting down after all the preamble, all the whereases, we get now therefore be it resolved. So again, it's saying that San Juan Island EMS can request equipment, supplies, facilities, personnel, and other resources being provided by the federal government directly, and that me sitting here as the chief has the delegated authority to communicate with the state of Washington on behalf of San Juan Island EMS. And then it gives my contact information. And again, I can anticipate Commissioner Clary's question about what happens if it's not me. I think that's why we kind of said in the first part it's with the EMS chief. If there's another chief that's appointed, then obviously the contact information changes, but the authority stays with the chief.
Okay.
Any question, Carl? It's Trish. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, is this particular resolution dealing with any time that any staff spends on COVID-19 issues and that you could get reimbursed for through this declaration of emergency?
It does. We're tracking as the state and our county has ramped up this specific declaration of emergency, this specific response. We're using all the national management, the national management system procedures, the EOC, the having an incident commander, having section chiefs, having branches and groups, and we're using all the right forms.
Is now exiting.
What we call a 214 form, which tracks activities. So anything that's out of the ordinary and in specific response to the COVID-19 crisis, we track separately. Right now, all that time gets paid through the normal payroll things, but by tracking it separately, when that ability to ask for reimbursement comes along, we have the ability to do that.
So you're keeping like a daily record of any mileage that you might get reimbursed for that would be COVID-19, any of your hours that are going to the EOC and for COVID-19 issues?
Right now
for any staff?
Yes, it applies to any of the staff, whether it's paid staff, whether it is my time, whether it's additional supplies. We haven't had to do any specific transports yet, so we haven't tracked any sort of mileage or anything like that, but we initiated that right away when we realized that we were changing our normal operations to make sure that anything that's over and above or out of the ordinary is tracked through an activity log, through time, time logs, and all those kinds of things there. And so it does need to be COVID specific. We've set up specific codes within the county payroll. Those are all there. We're keeping track of all the paper copies, the electronic copies. We get a file started, so when it's time to ask for that, and I think it's a 75-25 grant coming, 75% paid by the Fed, 25% by the state, that we would then be able to make those applications for reimbursement. And it's this resolution that we're looking at in front of us that allows me to deal directly with the state and move forward with those.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, any further questions on this? Am I frozen? Does everybody hear me? Okay. So I would again entertain a motion and a second to approve this resolution 20-520 request for emergency funding.
I make a motion that we approve the resolution 20-520.
Okay, second.
I second.
Thank you. And I'm just going to do a roll call vote. Everett?
Aye.
Myself, I say aye. Chris?
You say Trish?
Yes, I did.
Oh. Aye.
Gail? I'm just getting a
aye.
And Kyle?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I guess the next topic would be discussing deferment of projects that we've been working on as a board. It's really difficult to meet right now. There is work we can do, within our own committees, like Trish and I speaking earlier about the community relations committee. But integration seems to be at least on hold for now because we can't have a steering committee meeting or meet with the other board. We haven't gotten to our employee review of Chief Kutzing. We still really need to focus on some strategic planning. So how is everybody feeling about tabling some of these? We could defer some of these things. I think strategic planning, it might be great to have a subcommittee to have somebody, at least two people working on this in particular. One thing we do need to address in all of this is the budgeted cost of living adjustment for Interim Chief Kutzing. Everyone else at EMS had budgeted cost of living increases that went into effect this year, but we need to approve that. It's usually done in conjunction with an employee review. So, and
preparation and strategic planning, at least, you know, for the next month until we know more. And I, you know, doing, poor Carl, doing your employee review, I'm not sure how that happens, how we logistically do that until we're through this. I don't know, because I haven't been through that process yet. But
okay.
But I would say, I think all of these things should be, I would say yes, it makes sense to defer these items.
Can we do the cost of living raise for Carl, though?
We can. We can approve that right now.
I only have one concern about that. And it's, Carl, this is not personal at all. This has to do with the fact that we are right in the midst of a pandemic where people don't have jobs. And I'm really concerned about doing a cost of living increase. Not that you don't deserve it, like, totally, but I just think this could be something that people might look at and go, what the heck? You know, all these people that are without jobs and you guys are given a raise, even though it's just and fair, I think this is a tricky time. That's all I would like to interject.
On that note, though, it was something that was budgeted, and it is part of our 2020 budget, and the other employees at CMS have received their cost of living as well.
Yeah, and he's just not, it's just not any job that Carl has. He's the head of EMS during the pandemic.
I know. I just wanted to throw that out there, because
there's things that I think you should. It also incite that, you know, there will be reimbursement for the pandemic. There is, you know, financial things happening. And if cuts have to be made somewhere, it's certainly not going to be made with the EMS chief. The other things that have to be trimmed at some point, but it's certainly not going to be in leadership. So I think people would understand. To me, the public has to understand that. It's not like we're giving them like a CEO salary and
just
stock options,
right? big stock options.
They're offering nurses $120 an hour in New York City. This is no time to get cheap.
Oh my gosh! Yes. Wow.
So we may not New York City, and I appreciate it, Trish. And that's a good point, but honestly, I think people would be sensitive to the fact that this is somebody who puts himself out there as a healthcare worker, and so I think that's another way to look at it.
Sure.
Not just anybody, so I would say we should get on with it. Bring him up to speed with the rest of his workers who do put themselves out, so I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, but I do understand, you know, there are people out there who don't have jobs right now, don't have regular employment. I understand that, and whatever you decide is fine. I have a contract, I have a job. I'm not complaining. So please do keep that in mind, and I understand that There are folks out there, to Commissioner Layman's point, that there are folks out there who don't have a regular source of income.
And I guess what I was saying to Carl and my other commissioners is, I think this should happen. My concern was, is now the right time? You know, could that be deferred? You know, I don't know. Anyway, I just wanted to.
Yeah. Great.
Just discuss it, that's all.
Yeah, and to that, to just add background, it was budgeted for in the 2020 budget, but so was getting all the taxes that we projected, and so was a slight increase in the number of calls that we were running. So there, again, and that's the challenge with this particular COVID-19 crisis, is that we have a moving target, and it's very, very difficult to hone in on it. We're dealing with a lot of hypotheticals. We're dealing with a lot of unknowns. I understand that adds to frustration. frustration it adds to people wanting to be able to help but not knowing how to. I get it. I get it. You know, it makes it hard to plan. It makes it hard to, you know, we're doing a lot of good work in terms of the county. In fact, you know, trying to get ahead of some things. I've heard from Dr. Corsa and from others that say, you know, when you look at other counties, we're kind of ahead of the curve. However, we only have 12 cases. We're not King County with, you know, hundreds of deaths and thousands of cases. We have 12 confirmed cases. So that kind of puts it in perspective as well. It's easy for us to be ahead of the curve because we haven't had to deal with a huge response all at once. We have we're able to do some good planning on the forefront. And as IC Dog explained, was, you know, we plan for the worst and we hope for the best.
Kyle, did you have anything to add to this conversation?
Probably not. Thanks. Yeah, this is Kyle. I'm very sensitive to your point, Commissioner Lehman. I think it's an excellent point. This is a difficult time. At the same time, I suppose I am also comfortable moving forward with that proposal to make the cost of living adjustment. I think that we're going to need to actually probably exercise our fiscal oversight pretty closely over the next couple months as we do see what happens with the taxes and how they roll in both EMS and for the hospital district. Let's all kind of keep an eye on that. And I know this is not a raise itself. This is a cost of living adjustment. And so that, to my mind, that does make a distinction too. Although, of course, Chief Gutzing, from everything I've seen, you warn both, obviously. But these are difficult times, and we need to be very sensitive about it.
And Pam, do you have anything to add to this?
Yes. As Carl pointed out, it was in the budget for his 2020 budget, and the rest of all of the staff have received theirs. I can see both points, but as Commissioner Loring said, this is just a cost of a living adjustment. It's not a raise or an increase that way, but so it's totally up to the commissioners, but I don't have a problem with giving his cost of living adjustment if the commission doesn't.
Okay, in that case, I would entertain a motion to implement the cost of living adjustment for interim Chief Kutzing, and a second.
I'll make a motion for the cost of living increase for Chief Kutzing to be enacted.
And this is Commissioner Clary. I second it.
Okay, thank you. And we'll go through the roll call again. Everett?
Aye.
Myself, I'll say aye. Chris?
I'll say nay.
Okay. Gail?
Yay.
And Kyle?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you all very much. And based on our previous conversation before we jumped ahead, we're talking about deferring projects related to integration, employee reviews, and strategic planning. Is that where we're at?
It's my understanding. Okay.
Sure.
Do we make a motion for that?
I don't know that we need to. I would propose, though, that I do think, you know, the commissioners could take the time to work on strategic planning and then bring back a report to the board at our next, not the meeting this month, but or the following. Any thoughts on that?
So are you saying, Annalisa, that we're just going to be doing business, just the basic business at this moment, at this point? We're not going to do anything extra at all because we're just basically going to do finances and oversight as we've been.
Right.
And our whatever planning happens, there's no even out group meetings at all.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of extra committee meetings, but I do think strategic planning is something that we could work on at this time.
I'm curious because things are changing so much. Our strategic plan, I think COVID has sort of taken over in terms of what our next needs are going to be. We don't know if it's going to be financial or if it's going to be, you know, what we're going to be doing next. We might be doing a fundraiser for basic services for everybody. Who knows? But I think the community outreach seems like the biggest piece because we want to know what's going on. We want to keep abreast of what's happening, and we want to be. Here to be a reaction to what happens in the county and the community about health, too.
You know, I just can't imagine what the financial repercussions of this whole thing is going to be. If we all tried to go back to work tomorrow, it would still be devastating. There were over 6 million jobless applications for unemployment. So I don't see how we can plan anything because almost anything you do requires money. And we can't make any plans without knowing what, we don't even know if we're going to get the funds that we are obligated to spend. So I don't see how we can make any plans aside from even just getting together to talk. And as Gail says, we could easily be trumped just by the virus itself. So, but yeah, financially, it's going to be crazy.
Good point. Kyle, anything to add on that?
Yeah, I think we're in a difficult time right now in terms of trying to figure out how to spend our time and how to make sure we are taking advantage of maybe some extra time that people do have here and there. I support the idea of continuing to work on strategic planning. I think it's such a higher level process that I actually don't see it being hijacked necessarily by coronavirus. I think that we certainly need to be considering a pandemic as we're doing our strategic planning and figuring out, you know, how we would respond and how we prepare our community for that as a hospital district. So I think it's part of the conversation, but I think we could do that. So I support moving forward with some of the conversation that we had briefly started and trying to do the work that we can on our end if we have the time as commissioners to do it. With regard to the staff, I think that's a question we need to put to them. How much time do they have to work on that? And for at the same time, that would be a question I would have for Chief Kutzing as well in terms of his review. I think that's going to rest largely on how much time he has to devote to that at this point. And over the next few weeks, things are changing quickly, so we may find that we do have more time to devote to both these. Thanks.
Okay. Trish, did you want to add to that?
I don't think I have too much to add. I'm not sure. I mean, there's so much up in the air right now. There's so many variables.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for the community to know, to hear from us periodically is a good thing during this pandemic. And so I love the idea of working certainly on communication. But, you know, I'm a little stumped, I guess, about strategic planning. So.
Well, maybe we could visit it in 2 weeks at our meeting, at our end of the month meeting, to see where they're at then.
Yeah.
Want to go. I certainly don't have extra time to do that at this moment. I'm working still full-time, and I'm doing the EOC as well, so it's just a lot. So if that will do, talk about, I mean, or maybe we can wait till our next meeting to make a plan about strategic planning.
I like that. I like that idea. Okay.
Commissioner Lindstrom.
Yes, no fun.
Sorry, I don't mean to interject, even though I am. I'm happy to support this by organizing these meetings from a technical perspective. I don't feel unable to do that with my current workload. Now that you know, Pam's around, she's amazing and can do so much, and that's really helped. One thing I wanted to interject was the previous motion didn't state a 2% budgeted cost of living increase for Chief Kutzing. And so I just want to kind of say that was my understanding, and if anyone disagrees with that, please speak up. I don't think you have to vote over again. We all have that understanding, but...
Got it. So procedurally, and what we had budgeted for was a 2% cost of living increase, and that is what we voted to approve.
Correct.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. And then it sounds like we're going to proceed
with
planning
until now joining
our next meeting. So given that, we're getting towards the end, everybody, and I appreciate you all hanging in there. And we move to audience participation.
We didn't receive any requests for further participation. I don't know if I think Karin left. If she's still there,
she might want to... Well, somebody just came back. I don't know.
Okay, I heard Lily Dustrude come on. So, anyway, if we don't have any public comments, then we could move to commissioner comments. Anyone? I feel like saying Bueller. This is ridiculous. Okay.
Well, I like the idea that Gail put forth about. We'll plan at the next meeting to talk about planning.
Okay.
We're going to know a lot more in 2 weeks. This is such a dynamic situation with the pandemic, you know, with COVID-19. That goodness knows in 14 days we're going to know a lot more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it's great to know our EMS agency is doing really well, and really comforting to hear from people in the community too. Today. Anything else?
I agree.
Yeah.
So we have to send an email to Nathan that just says yes for signing documents that we're doing? Okay.
I'll send each of you an email tomorrow. I'll send each of you an email tomorrow with the things we voted on, stating what you voted for, and just ask you to confirm that in an email. So I'll email you each individually.
Perfect.
Okay. Email us. You need
to
respond. Okay.
And is that how we'll be signing the two resolutions as well?
Yes.
That'll all be okay.
Correct.
Yeah. So in that case, I wish everyone health and well-being, and thank you all for your time tonight, and I move to adjourn this meeting.
Okay.
Thanks,
can you
everybody.
Still hear me? Something
yeah.
happened.
Thank you all. Thank you all.
Okay, thank
Have
you.
A good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
The participant is now exiting.
Thank you all.